The Last Word with Matt Cooper on Today FM.
It's telly time. Jennifer Gannon and Ed Smith, who of course presents Ed's Songs of Praise here in Today FM on a Sunday, are with us. And Ed, BBC, we watch a lot of BBC in this country. We're familiar with all the top stars. I suspect Gary Lineker is making more money out of the BBC than he even made in his best season with Tottenham about 20 years
there
ago.
There it is. To be honest, my first reaction when it was revealed that he gets paid £1.75 million, I was a little shocked at how low it was.
What?
I was a little bit, yeah, considering...
He's not playing anymore. He's not a top-class footballer. He is the presenter.
Maybe I need to adjust my expectations here because he's an old Spurs boy. He's worked twice that. And that's not really what he's getting paid, I'm sure. A lot of the chicanery that goes on around these figures is that, for example, Graham Norton's in the top three. He gets £610,000 for his radio
show. Is that all?
Yeah. You see, Radio 2 show and a range of programmes and series, inverted commas, not including his chat show. So the transparency of these figures aren't really reflective, I think, of what they're getting paid. Because a lot of them,
I suspect Norton's getting paid a couple of million, probably
at least.
And
that's he's
like
probably
outside of his wine business and outside of him writing the books. And same with Gary Lineker, outside of his, you know, Walker's Crisps ads.
I don't know if he's done that for ages, but he does TV. He does BT Sports, for example. He does the football and that as well.
Yes, I mean, that's
that's the reason why they say they have to pay him so much in the BBC to keep him from doing solely commercial television.
So I think the controversy about this, of course, is based on the fact that BBC, it's all publicly funded, so people have a bit more of a keen eye as to where the money goes. And for the first time, it was revealed 2 years ago, the list, and there was no women in that list. But for the first time, three of its best paid stars now are women. Zoe Ball, Vanessa Feltz and Claudia Wilkeman have made the top 10 for the first time. So it's caused a bit of a...
And again, with the Zoe Baldwin, Jennifer, it has her for about $375,000. But looking at it, she seems to be getting more money again on top of that out of the Strictly Come Dancing spin-off.
Yeah, and Strictly It Takes Two, that's the show that Zoe Ball is on, that she presents. But Strictly is a different arm. It's a production company within the BBC that they don't actually have to give the figures for their presenters for that or how much money they're on. And I think the thing about it is this transparency issue where MPs were putting pressure on the BBC to reveal their figures, it puts them in a bind, not only, you know, exposing exactly what everybody's making, but it puts them in an awkward position because, as you said, they are in then negotiations with places like Sky, who have, you know, bags of money, Rupert Murdoch's cash cow, and ITV, where they can, you know, try and swoop in and offer more money because they know exactly the amount that they're making. So I know a lot of people were kind of, eyebrows were raised about the amount, the exact amount that people were on, especially now that the BBC are coming under fire for, you know, the TV licence issue where they are bringing it back. It's not on a...
For the over 75s, they're not going to get their free TV licence anymore.
It has to be subsumed by the BBC, which is a deal they did a couple of years ago. It's kicking in next year. So
it's not great optics for them, right, to have this at the moment. But also it does leave them in this vulnerable position where, you know, companies that are not public service broadcasters can swoop in and try and match that or better the wages. So, you know, I mean, and that's why I think that they are such... at such a high level because they do want to keep that talent there.
Okay. Let's move on. Apparently American Love Island is now happening. There's an Australian Love Island.
There's a German Love Island. German Love Island is insane. Just to say, I don't know
Is your German good, is it?
My German is, ich spreche in Deutsch.
Okay, right.
But meine Deutsch ist schlecht, actually. But the UK Love Island has just become such a massive phenomenon in the US. Like, audiences can watch it on Hulu, their streaming service, and it's really captured their imagination this year because you've got opinion pieces in Vanity Fair about it and on Vulture, which is a US pop culture website, as well as really high-regarded pop culture podcasts. And so it's just surprised that the US are going to start their own version.
The world is going to hell in the handcart, isn't
it? I think this is England's revenge on the States. I've no major issue with Love Island. Good luck to it. But you know, I think...
You're not watching it, though.
I'm not watching it, no. That's more circumstantial than...
You would be if you weren't
busy. The thing is, I did dip in a few times. I'm really enjoying Maura from Longford. She's the best thing in it, as far as I can tell. She's just genuinely the most Irish character I've seen in that.
She is.
She's incredible. And we were just discussing her facial expressions.
Yeah.
She really can't hide her emotions like any good Irish woman. Like she gives it as she's given. So, but I think though with the Love Island in the States, they're going to find it hard to adjust to a certain degree. This could make or break it because like the likes of The Bachelor and all that, they're on once a week, but this is going to be on 5 days a week.
They're not going to do any weekend recaps like the way we have. Like, they have a Saturday off in the UK version, but they're not going to do a Sunday recap. So it's just 5 days a week. But also, I think it's going to be very different because it's on CBS, and that's kind of assumed as an kind of old people's station. So it's going to be on at the pre-Watershed time of 8 o'clock, which will mean no, you know, the language will be less crude. The games that they play will be less sexual, obviously, and then the swimwear will also be considerably less skimpy. So it's going to be a very different take on Love Island.
No, but I think, yeah, it'd be interesting to see how this plays out. It was hugely successful.
And part of its success is because of the really sarcastic commentary from Ian Sterling, who narrates the UK series. And it looks as if they're not going to do that for the US version. So it seems to be quite staid and a bit stiff. So I don't know.
Okay, last night I ended up watching the United States England World Cup semi final, which
brilliant
was
game of football,
really, really good game of football. Oof. You watched
Love Island.
Yeah, okay. You were telling me off air earlier that last night's was one of the best ever episodes of Love Island.
Yeah.
I've heard this from other people out on the floor here today as well.
The water cooler was heating up with the chat about Love Island last night.
Why?
Because it was a controversial recoupling where the girls and guys had been split up and new people entered from Casa Amor with the girls in Casa Amor and then the guys in the normal villa with new girls. And then it was like, you either stay with the person that you were with previously or you can do a recoupling. And it really showed the guys' true colours. And that's where a lot of Twitter conversation was about. Someone like Curtis, who's with this girl called Amy, who's never had a long-term boyfriend before and is very insecure. And while she was professing her love for him in the Casa Amor villa, he was trying to crack on with some girl that wasn't even interested in him.
God.
And then he had someone like Michael and Amber. Amber, who's very tough and she puts a lot of walls up. But then Michael decided that he'd recouple with someone else. And that was truly upsetting because he spent the whole time denigrating Amber behind her back then. And basically the scales fell from everybody's eyes and it was an intense, dramatic error. And
do you regret missing it now, Ed?
No, I was definitely happier watching the football. Brilliant game of football.
But it was a great game. Really good. The crossing was fantastic.
Two of the best crosses I've seen all season.
Yeah, they were brilliant. Absolutely brilliant.
The US looked formidable. It'd be hard to beat them now. I kind of felt bad for England a little bit, but I don't think it was a penalty.
It wasn't a penalty. The VAR is becoming a joke.
It's added 7 or 8 minutes on. They're going to have to make an account for this. Sorry now, Jen. But we've shoehorned perfectly from Love Island to VAR.
Love Island is the World Cup of reality.
Exactly. There you go.
That's what I believe.
But when someone tried to explain Love Island to me with the extra house, sorry, now I don't know, the Casa Amor.
The Casa Amor, yeah.
I can't understand the Nations League in football, but it was just as bad when it came to someone trying to explain to me the ins and outs and the finagleries of Love Island. So she was, I'm like, no, I'm out.
It's like the Envy League.
Can't do it. Yeah, I can't do it.
No.
Okay, let's move on. Let's move away from Love Island. Let's talk about Louis Theroux because he'll be back on BBC Two as well. There's a new documentary revisiting one of his most controversial previous subjects, the Westboro Baptist Church, which apparently is a hugely controversial Christian ministry that has picketed at military funerals and other high-profile events with deliberately provocative and homophobic placards. Here's a clip from one of his previous documentaries on the topic.
Why do you guys think that you can speak for God? Did God tell you to come be...
We can read, because we can read. You read the Word of God, that's how we can speak for God. You can read, right?
Yeah, I can fucking read.
So cry aloud, spare not, lift up thy voice like a trumpet, and show my people their transgressions. That means your sin, that means your manner of life. Make it crystal clear what the manner of your sin is. God hates fags. What part of that don't you understand, girl?
I don't fucking understand why God hates fags. I don't fucking understand why God hates anyone except for fucking bigots.
Because he can. I'm sorry that you were raised for the devil, but I'm going to teach my children what the Lord their God doth require of them. You were raised for the devil, and I'm sorry about that. Well, your parents obviously did not love you. They hated you.
Do you like it better when she gets upset?
It's not a matter of what I like, Louie. What I'm telling you is her moral compass is broken. I told you at the house. The youth of America, they have no idea what the Lord their God required. Like,
to me, as an outsider, it's mildly upsetting to see someone get upset. Do you feel that in any way?
I know it's mildly upsetting to you.
Is it upsetting to you to see her get upset?
No, it's upsetting to me that her parents raised her for the devil.
Good God. Actually, by the way, I'm probably heading to hell myself for ignoring the graphic language warning that I was supposed to give at the start of that clip, but I suppose it gives the emphasis. I mean, like, these people are nuts.
Well, yeah, this is his third time back. He was back there in 2006, 2011. He's going back, I think, with a view post-Trump to see where they're at. So this is 13 years, just to check in on the changes. And
also, they're basically Father Phelps, Fred Phelps, he was the figurehead of the church. He passed away, he died. And it's really to look at how they've been in flux since then, because in the previous time that he had gone back to them in 2011, a lot of the young girls that he had seen in 2006, they had abandoned the church and they'd been, you know, absolutely abandoned by their families then. So they weren't talking to them. And one of Father Phelps' granddaughters in this series, she is now one of the most outspoken anti-Westboro Baptist speakers. So I mean, there was an article I think in The Guardian a couple of years about how their experience was when they left the church itself, and you know, partly was influenced by Louis III's presence and kind of opening their eyes up to what they look like to the wider world. So I mean, the series is going to be dealing with the allegations. There's been a lot of allegations around Pastor Phelps' final days, like including, you know, rumours of mental illnesses and the excommunications and how vehement he was against the people that left the church. And it's been hit by, like, you know, a lot of the high-profile family.
It's a cult. It's a very kind of rancid, toxic, sludge cult of the worst of humanity. But I think, as Jen says, now that Fred Phelps has gone, the figurehead has gone, it seems to be kind of breaking apart. Which
you
is
mentioned the phrase
positive.
Worst of humanity, which gives us an opportunity to play another clip of Louis Theroux from his documentary on Jimmy Savile, where he confronted him about the rumours that he was a paedophile.
So why do you say in interviews that you hate children when I've seen you with kids and you clearly enjoy their company and you have a good rapport with them?
Right. Obviously, I don't hate them.
So why would you say that then?
Because we live in a very funny world. And it's easier for me as a single man to say, I don't like children. Because that puts a lot of salacious tabloid people off the hunt.
Are you basically saying that so tabloids don't, you know, pursue this whole is he, isn't he a paedophile line, basically?
Yes. Oh, right. How do they know whether I am or not? How does anybody know whether I am? Nobody knows whether I am or not. I know I'm not. So I can tell you from experience that the easy way of doing it when they say, oh, you have all them children, do more fix it. I say, yeah, I hate them.
Yeah, that's to me that sounds more sort of suspicious in a way.
Hard luck.
Because it seems so important.
But that's my policy, that's the way it goes.
Really?
That's what I do. And it's worked a dream.
Has it worked?
A dream. Ho, ho, ho.
Oh, God.
I think that whole documentary was a turning point in the way that Louis Theroux actually did his documentaries then, because at that time he was just kind of interviewing celebrities or oddities like Paul Daniels or Anne Widdecombe, and there wasn't that really investigative journey. And I think afterwards, after the Savile, when he revisited the Savile story and talked to the victims, he did say he wished he had pushed him more about the subject. And I know that his production team did, but they didn't use it on camera. So he always feels that was a missed opportunity.
I think it was a tricky one for Louis at the time. Yeah. It was a different environment, you know. Scurrilous rumours are not fact, you know, so he had to play it very carefully. It's still very compelling, and obviously in retrospect now, knowing what we know now, very chilling. But I felt that the follow-up documentary was a little mealy-mouthed for me.
It was, and also the fact that there were victims had told him in between that time, well, around that time when he did the original documentary, of the behaviour that Savile had with them, and he almost dismissed it as going, well, that's just the way it was back then. And they were saying, we were telling our story to you back then, and it didn't do him any favours, I don't think.
He wasn't the Daily Mail journalist. He says, why didn't you mention it at the time? And like, this is something you could ask yourself, because you knew as well as anyone. So I think that's it. I mean, his style, I mean, you know, he does tend towards the lowest hanging fruit, like the Westboro, you're shooting fish in a barrel there to go. And especially with his very English style, in contrast, the bombast and the kind of, you could hear him there in that little clip going, you know, I find it quite upsetting. And then you might go, you find it kind of upsetting. You know, so, you know, that's where the kind of, you get a lot of the entertainment value from it. But I find him a little, problematic, as
I say. Okay. Now, Four Weddings and a Funeral was an immensely popular movie from the 1990s. It is returning, not as a remake of the movie, but as a mini-series. And the trailer for Mindy Kaling's Four Weddings and a Funeral dropped today. Let's hear a bit of it.
Please, I need my bag. I took the wrong one off the carousel.
It has some highly classified material in it. I'm sorry, can I help you?
Didn't realize Jack Ryan flew commercial.
Oh, great, yeah. Pithy comments. That's exactly what the situation needed.
Were you at college with Ainsley too? I always thought of Ainsley, Duffy and Craig as more of a trio.
No, there are always four of us.
Ah! I'm the funny one. Everyone's always like, do Denzel. And I'm like, I see you, my man.
Genuinely upsets me when you do that.
Do we really have to go to this party? Your friends don't even like me.
What are you talking about? My friends love you.
No, they don't. They think I'm trashy and that my boobs are fake, which they are, but your friends don't know that.
Maya, this is my boyfriend, Cash.
Wait, this is Cash? His father works at the airport.
Maybe he could help you find that cute guy.
Did you call him Ryan Gosling dipped in caramel?
I did not say that.
Have you ever had the feeling you've gone down the wrong path? Like, somewhere along the line, you've made a bad choice, and now it's too late to go back.
I feel like that literally every day.
I can't believe you dressed up for him.
I didn't.
You're wearing a padded bra.
No, I'm not.
Let me honk your boob.
Okay.
Oh my God, that sounds terrible.
Is this show the funeral?
It's awful.
It's one elongated funeral.
It fills me with a... same amount of dread I get when I get invited to four weddings. This
it's nothing to do with the original, except for Andy McDowell has a cameo in it, and then Dermot Mulroney from My Best Friend's Wedding is in it somewhere. But
it sounds more Love Actually than Four Weddings, I think.
There's no Hugh Grant swearing. There's no acerbic Kristen Scott Thomas character. There's no charming John Hannah. In fact, I don't actually think there is a couple in it that aren't straight, which is strange. And it feels like it's back in a time warp. It feels very in the early, like the late 90s, early 2000s, when a load of sitcoms tried to emulate Friends. It just feels very formulaic.
Four Weddings changed the romantic comedy genre for the better. You know, it's very anglified, a very English Richard Curtis, you know, but I think then they've taken a step back and it's very Americanized. The trailer alone sounds like a parody.
I'm surprised, though, because Mindy Kaling is smart and she's, you know, really a good comic herself. And I'm surprised it's not more modern, it's not more fresh or exciting. I mean, there's barely a laugh in that trailer, which doesn't bode well for comedy.
So it's hardly likely to be seen by many people over here.
I don't know, because a lot of Hulu stuff Channel 4 buy, so you don't know, but I think this one will be buried, you know, in a funeral that no one will attend. In an Eleanor Rigby style funeral.
Perfect, yeah.
Actually, we're getting quite a few comments coming in. Sean Murray says, please stop this. Juliana, that's an insult to Love Actually. Well, it's those before weddings and the funeral. They remade Death at the Funeral as well and Americanized it, and it was pure shite. Americans can't do British humour, says Dom.
I actually thought they were talking about the Westboro Church there for a second. I was a little confused. I had to look at the trailer before I came on here. It's as bad as it looks. It looks as bad as it sounds.
It's an adaptation that
desperate.
No one was crying out for, though.
No.
And no one needed.
No,
so I don't really understand. And also because it's so loosely based on the original, it just should be its own thing instead of trying to drag,
just call it something else.
Drag
yeah.
the name through the mud. Yeah,
exactly.
Yeah.
Give me picks of the week, please. What are you going for first, Jennifer?
Stranger Things, Series 3. It's back tomorrow, 4th
Does
of July.
Does it need to be back?
Yes. I think the last season was hit and miss. We really didn't need the whole, you know, subplot with Eleven and her lost sister, which
was
very boring and very strange.
Yeah.
But this third installment looks like we're back to the original, the way, like, that it kind of had all this great nostalgia attached to it, where it felt like The Goonies, it felt like Stand By Me. And it's 1985 now, and the kids are getting older, and it's about their last summer kind of being in this group of friends before adolescence take over and hormones go crazy, and that's a lot of the part of it, as well as fighting against, you know, the threat of the shadow monster and the evil of the upside down. Also, they get a mall, and it's the Starcourt mall, so there's lots of mullets going on. Steve's hair is back. Fans of Steve's hair.
God.
I know there's a lot of them out there, including me. The mullet is back. And if season two gave us anything, it gave us Steve being a great character, changing from someone in season one that was kind of a not
a
charismatic
douchey,
Tom Cruise-y kind of character, to the best babysitter in the world. So go. I'm really looking forward to it. I think this one is having a lot more fun than last season, which was a little bit, you know, up and down. It wasn't as good as it could be. But this one, it looks very promising.
Okay, what's your pick of the week, Ed?
Well, get your slippers out, because I'm going the other direction. Serengeti. Tomorrow night, BBC One, 8 o'clock, a lavish new wildlife series, which kind of dramatises an African lioness and her pride, who have been they've been chucked out of their group.
It's the Lion King in real life.
But this is the lead up to the Lion King coming out later this year. There's a baboon called Bakari, and I'm not sure how... I know, listen to me, just bear with me in this. So I'm not sure how much of a fan Attenborough would be of this, because they very much dramatised and edited this to actually play out as a kind story. Of a, as a tense, almost like a love story and a tense thriller. So, but the, apparently the camera work on this and the filming is supposed to be absolutely spectacular.
Lines
and it's
and
voiced
wigs.
By John Boyega. No, it's actually real lines, Jen. Come
lines
on.
Are allowed to have wigs
you can believe
too.
In Stranger Things and a couple of lines having a bad day is too far. No, anyway, so it's voiced by John Boyega, who you might remember from the Star Wars films. It could go either way. I've seen a couple of bits of it. It looks really, really absolutely spectacular. And I'm definitely going to be watching it tomorrow night, 8 o'clock.
Okay, just one thing I want to finish off with. I mean, there's a story that Top Gear's Chris Harris, well, that he was been bullied by his colleagues, Freddie Flintoff and Paddy McGuinness. And
ooh,
he
has someone
denied
from Top
that.
Gear getting bullied.
Yeah,
mm.
We had also the thing last night. People started complaining bitterly about the gesture that was made by the American captain, Graham.
Was she drinking tea?
Yeah, when she made this gesture of drinking tea, which was
Boston Tea Party.
Offensive and the rest of it.
Come on, how many, a lot more footballers have done a lot more offensive things
it was
than that.
Nonsense.
My theory is, I honestly don't think people are actually offended. I just think they're doing it.
No, I have a different theory.
Cry, whinge and moan.
Yeah, because apparently tweeting while watching TV could be ruining your experience, a new study has shown. Is it all these people who are taking offence at nothing on their television screens?
They're
then they put it, and then suddenly it all gets blown up as if like everybody's reacting like these idiots.
Yeah, there you go.
But I think there's some shows you can watch with one eye on the TV and the other eye on your on Twitter, like Love Island, like, you know, anything.
The Tory
that,
Show, for example.
Like the Tory Show, where people hate watch The Late Late Show or The Rosa Tralee or Eurovision. But then there's other shows like something like Chernobyl or Big Little Lies or, you know, stuff like that, years and years, that you're not going to tweet during.
Well,
and
it brings
you
the best out on Twitter. You see some of the memes. I'm not even watching Love Island and I'm getting great gas out of some of the Twitter action that Love Island's provoking.
And they almost encourage it with Love Island. They want you to have the hashtag. They want it to be like a giant WhatsApp group.
Of course.
And so you can have those two things,
you
like
can do both.
Side by side. You can have your great dramas and your prestige telly that you won't tweet you in. And I actually think the thing about that is, like, you run the risk of missing vital information if you're tweeting and trying to concentrate on something like a complex TV show. So you shouldn't do
and
it.
And then there's Love Island.
And then there's Love Island, which is like your brain holiday. So it's okay.
Well, to be honest, actually, we had another listener getting in touch saying that they were embarrassed by the antics of Maura Higgins on Love Island, that she's not a great representative for Ireland. So there you go. Not
what
everybody
are we supposed
is in love
to
with
be
her.
Like
but
the
I think
Rosa
Alex
Tralee?
Morgan, I have to say, is a great representative for the United States, even if she's
good
supposed to be tea drinking.
Yeah.
And
relax,
I look forward
everybody.
To watching her in the final on Sunday evening.
Yes.
Excellent. It's with Jennifer Gannon. Thank you very much for joining us.
The Last Word with Matt Cooper on Today FM.